On May the 24th, 1987, about 800,000 people gathered to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Golden Gate Bridge. Unfortunately, one of them didn't survive. His name was Alex Clayton.
Alex, in those moments on the Golden Gate Bridge, came all the way back to that room he used to come in and sit and wait for me, looking at that Golden Gate Bridge. And I can't help but think that he came full circle when he was on that bridge, and suddenly thought that he was probably nailed to a cross, and he could go off the bridge, nailed to that cross like this, you know? And people tell me that, you know, he did a tuck and roll when he went off the bridge, but I doubt that. I doubt that because Alex, he didn't really have finesse. You see, it was real barnstorming type of behavior, and so I could actually see him, you know, diving off the bridge with arms straight out, you know, just like a Jesus Christ, you know, and hitting the water full belly.
Quite an acrobat. I happened to notice when he took off the bridge and he did an actual triple backflip before he hit the water, and there was barely a ripple when he hit it. It was just like nice right into the water. It was it would have been a 10 if you were judging it. And 200 feet, so you'd think he'd try quadruple or something, but a triple and nice right into the water.
I don't know. It's shocking to think that someone should fall off the bridge when he never went on bridges in the first place. I once had to pull a car over and he just right underneath the underpass and then went back over. Fall off, this is kind of ironic. Think about it. Golden Gate Bridge. I'm sorry.
He always seemed like a kind of suicidal guy.
So you think he jumped?
I think he jumped. Don't you think he jumped? You think somebody pushed him?
I don't know. It seemed happy enough to me. I can't figure it. Why he would jump. I know they're saying he jumped.
Were you saying maybe he was doing a dance to the bridge? Kind of like an existential performance piece as he was going across and that somebody's elbow reached out because there were so many people there and hopped him off the fence?
The dance? Well, I don't know. I just know that I'm not really sold on the jump.
Well, I think perhaps he was looking for whales.
Yes, sir.
And he leaned out a bit too far. You know, I always knew that he had this great affection for whales. And that perhaps he was out searching the horizon on this really perfect day, you know, all these people going across the bridge and big communal celebration, and what a great thing it would be if he sight some whales and see them playing in the Pacific Ocean off the coast of San Francisco. The city in the background and looking out over the bay. And maybe you saw one. Maybe it was really Alcatraz Island and he thought it looked like a whale. Leaned out a little bit too far.
Yeah.
And that was that.
Alex and I first met back in college. Back in the 60s when they were recruiting people from the company. Various splinter groups that they felt might be sympathetic to their causes. Alex and I were in a Save the Nuclear Whales group. They thought this would be a good cover, realizing that we obviously didn't believe it, we were just in it for the chick.
Well, a lot of people, well, I guess they're going to talk about it for quite a few years. There are those who think it's just on purpose. That's not true. They make a lot about it. Home life. Lack of home life. Finances, but I know that he didn't do that. See, Alex and I were like this.
Now it came to the sky.
Actually, I thought it was the most amazing piece of street theater I had ever seen. I was standing not 30 feet from him when he leaped. I really hope he heard me when I yelled over, "This is great, Alex, go for it." You know, he always wanted to do something like this. Ever since I knew him as a child, he wanted to do something spectacular. That was a brilliant.
Some people think he killed himself. That's a bunch of bullshit. He didn't kill himself. I felt very close to Adam, too. You know, the first man I ever slept with, and love him as you know?
Okay.
And, you know, he worked at a regular sort of job. You know, he was a lawyer. And he did, you know, just sort of corporate law, which wasn't at all keeping with his sort of politics. I said, but he just sort of did that and made a
living. You know, he mailed over an M16 bolt by bolt and piece by piece, and he kept it over his mantle. He used to take it out sometimes and shoot the raccoons out back. It was incredible the noise that thing would make.
And it was when he was very young. He lived in South Africa and was actually, I think, mercenary in different rebellions that went on. And
he worked in a left-wing pen factory. Yeah, a little boring job. I don't know, he used to try and tell me about the job, but couldn't really find anything interesting to say. And
Alex is a good man, a loyal man, self-made man, a loyal magnate, shoe salesman, some of those, but he's a solid fellow, a real community kind of guy. He set out there every day.
Actually, we first met in the bathroom. It was the ladies' room of my school. He had taken a job after school. You know, he came from a very poor background. And he got a job. I believe it was through a neighbor of the family who was the janitor at the convent school, and he had gotten a job helping to clean up, oh, you know, wax the floors and clean out the lavatories, etc. We met in the bath?
Well, caught fish and soda. And his parents let me buy some food. He caught more than 100.
Alex, he was like a brother to me, like a brother I never had. He was actually probably the closest male friend I ever had who wasn't a lover. We met at Arcosanti in 74, I guess it was. I don't know how he ended up at Arcosanti, but he had a job there as a baker. Many people don't know that he was a dancer when he was younger in New York City. He was a very good dancer. And he used to give me private lessons. I had this problem with my feet where they wouldn't walk parallel, and I really wanted to fix that. And Alex had learned some of the Alexander technique. And in just a few lessons, showing me certain movements to do, I was able to walk with my feet parallel, and they've been fine ever since. I really feel like in those few lessons, he sort of restructured my legs.
When I first met Alex, when he and I, oh gosh, he was an air dancer, backup for the main act, and I was a bouncer. And we could get together afterwards, and we'd have a show, and talk stage after the show, and talk about the band, and I perceived his dance, and he really was a great band dancer. So he could even go dance with actually, he almost could have seen something, but not. He really was singing the best. After that, I mean, you really didn't keep getting, like, he wrote letters occasionally, sent concert cards occasionally, but most friends sort of fall off in the distance kind of way.
What a bummer. Man, Alex was the best coach I ever had. The one who, like, got me into softball, you know? He also turned me on to Wrigley. So this is, like, a secret. See, my dad died kind of young, and Alex was sort of like my dad in a way, but kind of like my brother and my coach. And he's also kind of like my sister. He had that, you know, feminine side of him. Not too many people knew about it.
Yeah.
He also turned me on to the greatest dentist I ever had.
It was really funny, actually, when he died, because I remember seeing the videotape of him flying down over the bridge. And as he hit the water, it was kind of funny. I was drunk. But that's not important. Anyway, so, what else did he do? That's right. Remember those axe murderers back in, 74, I believe, March? That was him. He was going around, and he was cutting off people's heads. I mean...
Oh, no. No, I really loved Alex. I mean, Alex meant, he was just heavy. He was like energy. He was commitment. He said, just do it. I mean, he got me. He's the one that got me, into computers. And, he said, just go all out. Just commit yourself. It doesn't have to be, brain surgery to be everything. And, I didn't know, what was happening at the time. I mean, this was like 2 or 3 years ago when he first, I was like a disciple.
It was kind of a different guy. I mean, he was kind of like the rest of us. He just kind of wanted to make a buck, you know. The thing he used to do all the time, and I don't know if this has anything to do with what he said, is he used to play the guitar, but there wasn't any room down on Pier 39 or the Anchorage or anything like that. So what he used to do is he'd go onto the bridge, and he would sit there with his guitar case open, and like people would drive by going 50, 60 miles an hour, and they would throw change into his guitar case, and it was really strange because he had it open, and the change would fly, and it would hit the guitar case, and it would go through the back, and it'd leave little holes all over. It kind of looked like machine gun parts, like Bonnie and Clyde or something. And for Alex, the change would go, and he'd start to climb over the rail, and we'd always say, "No, Alex, you're going to hurt yourself. Please don't do that." But like they said, he was just like the rest of us. He just wanted to make a buck. Anyhow, if you'll excuse me, I think I have to go to work now. So I'll talk to you.
I think if he had only worked at it, he could have been a great concert pianist. I taught him for about 5 years, and he was playing fairly well. He did. He liked Mozart. Mozart was his favorite. And when I gave him anything by Mozart, he seemed to excel in it. He seemed to understand Mozart, and he played it very well.
I remember Alex was probably one of the best blues guitarists I had ever seen. He really had that soul that you want from a blues guitarist. You know, someone who doesn't know where all the notes are, but really feels they cares. Alex used to play a guitar with only 3 strings because he couldn't afford the other 3. And this gave him a sort of hollow, empty sound. People really got into it, Alex had used. I remember a particularly ambitious piece Alex composed, Sweet for 3 fingers and a joint. We rarely performed it because the joint never really made it to the stage that often. But the feeling was there. Our old friend John Cage used to write music for Alex. Little dots. No, it's just little dots. Alex would look at them. Look at the guitar, smoke his joint, people would go crazy. But that's the way it was being around now. That's what the music said. The music said, gee, I'm pissed off. I don't know why, but shit, life's a bitch, you know? Alex used to like to play 7-8 times because he didn't want to pay for the extra 8 note to make it to 4-4.
kind of character. He used to come here and play music. I played these various instruments, and, well, of course, Alex, he was a virtuoso, and his instrument was the jew's harp. He played the Leibowitz Concerto for Jew's Harp with the New York Philharmonic. No, it was the Berlin Symphony. Yeah, that's it. And it was fabulous. It was magnificent.
I remember Alex when, after he had been knighted by the Queen.
What Queen?
The Queen of England. You know, several years ago there was quite a bit of publicity about a lad that managed to get into the Queen's bedroom. And he sat on the edge end of the Queen's bed and was offered a cigarette by the Queen. Now, this is the gentleman that got the publicity. But Alex, this gentleman was not the first gentleman to visit the Queen. Alex was there several years before when the Queen was much younger. And he spent considerable time with the Queen, and she was so pleased with Alex that she knighted him. And so I remember Alex just as Sir Alex Clayton given him.
Oh, I knew he was creative.
Very extremely creative.
Yes. Because he could write music. And his music that he wrote songs of.
Well, wasn't knighted for his creativity.
No, probably not. But the music that he wrote was quite a bit like Mozart. Right?
Possibly. You think he had the rhythm that the Queen desired?
Yeah. Alex saved my life. I was in 11 miles inside of an Apollo code. Not proved to be the smartest thing to do. For as I started to follow him, I slipped. And I went down about 25 feet. The only thing that was keeping me up was the stick that I had. Well, Waldo, who was another friend, he's a fellow juggler, he pulled out a harmonica and played Home on the Range. This is what I felt as I started to slip down. Alex came, dumped his pack, came over to me, helped me get my pack off, boosted me up to a safe spot. Now this is the last thing I would have seen would have been Waldo playing Home on the Range. This is the last sight I would have seen. He made no move to help me at all. Everybody else found the situation rather humorous. I, however, saw only this, Alex coming to my aid out of my right peripheral vision, and the rocks below, and of course the stick stuck in the mud. I'm slowly slipping. I had no foothold at any time. Home on the Range, where the deer can't go play. And that's how Alex saved my life.
Cut. Alex. Get the cat out of the way, will you? And he walked over to it. He went bam with his foot. He got it out of the way. And the cat went flying out the door about 6 feet, I'm sure. And just landed, boom, on the ground. And started wriggling, shaking, twisting, turning like this. And I said, oh my God, what have you done? What have you done now, Alex? You idiot. And he said, well, we've got to do something. And the cat was on the ground twitching like this. I said, well, we've got to kill it. I mean, it's dying. Put it out of its misery. And, so first of all, he got it around the throat, and he strangled it and twisted. He said, I think that's it. And I said, no. It's still twitching, and it was. And we both got our hands on it, and we went, yeah! And killed it. And then didn't know what to do again, you know. So we got the dustbin lid. I remember I got the dustbin lid and put the dustbin lid. You call it a garbage can here, but it has a lid, and Brendan's called a dustbin lid. And we put the lid over it. And then went to find a sack to put the cat in. And by then, with the birds and the neighbor's cat, I was shaking. My heart was thumping. I was scared. And I'm sure he was, too. His face went redder than usual. And so we came back with a bag, you know, and by then, really feeling bad. Lifted the lid of the garbage can off to get the cat out and put it in the sack and take it to garbage. No cat. The cat was gone. Well, that was the neighbor's cat. Lost one of its nine lives. Yeah, I miss Alex. I wish she'd had nine lives.
similar to Sonic Coach.
Alex was, well, he's wanting to convert to being a Mormon because, see, the Mormons have a real good, strong welfare system. And Alex, you know, he wasn't worth a day's worth, you know, for his life.
He came to me one time in the chapel. I was thinking of entering the novitiate. He was contemplating the priesthood.
Alex saw me for a number of years. And I can confirm at this point that, in fact, he was a schizophrenic.
I also don't realize that Alex had traveled extensively in India. And sometimes for extended periods of time, he sat at the feet of many of India's great teachers. And aside from the realizations about self and truth and the universe that he may have learned while he was in India, one of the greatest things he brought back was a dynamite Hindu accent.
But, I don't know, so I think back on the times that Alex and I had, and I remember, you know, the jello bathing and the free pizza I always got. And I have to realize that that's never going to happen again. I mean, I know. He was too much of a free spirit, I think, to live much longer than he could. But, so, he had a good business, had a lot of friends, and that's all that really counts in America. I wish I could write a poem now, but I was always a bit shallow.
Well, one time we went on a camping trip, and while everybody else was cooking dinner, I noticed that Alex was sitting by himself off on the table, arranging rocks that he found on the beach in rows by side.
We were out there. I don't play cricket, actually. I was just kind of cheering it up with my mountain bike. Alex was out there. He was cheering it up with his mountain bike, too. And Alex and I got to get rooms. And we were fast friends from the moment we met. Alex is that kind of a guy. First thing he said, "Hi, how are you doing? You got 30 bucks you can lend me?" But that was just Alex's style.
It's so funny. We were in a Chinese restaurant in England. We were trying to order food, and
And the Chinese waiter couldn't understand this, and so she went back to the kitchen and she pointed out to them what to put in the pan. It was really amusing, and of course, you know, it was so untraditional for them. They were just berserk. They didn't wait.
I mean, what made him tick? I think it was an accident as a child. But you really, you kept it totally under control during the leak. It's amazing.
You know, one of the things that a lot of people didn't really know about Alex was, you know, and it was also a problem that he had with the Hare Krishna thing, was he was really addicted to sugar. So, you know, like, it was like payday. Alex was the one that turned me on to the thing. He used to go down to the airport and give people carrot cake. But then he felt weird about it, and he would take it back, and he would actually distill the stuff, get the sugar out of it, and he would eat it plain. And later on, it actually became like a major habit. When you do it, you get the concentrated sugar, but he couldn't absorb it through his taste buds fast enough. I mean, this is true. I mean, it sounds strange, but so what he would do is he would start to mainline the stuff, and it was really strange. Other kids walking around with backpacks on, he was out there, going to school or something. Now, he had this huge thing of the super highly concentrated sugar, and there was a little thing that ran down his shirt. And if you see the autopsy report, there are little needle marks up and down his arm. Now, people just didn't know that about the guy.
Oh, I've had a good life.
Yeah. He's gone up, but I think he may have been very happy, and I think maybe he decided that it was like best to leave when you were very, very happy. Yeah. We find people like me, and take them from what they were, which was scum. And now I'm happy. I'm back with my family again, and got most of my friends back.
The night after he died, he came to me in a dream.
First, when I heard about what had happened on the bridge, I thought it was just another one of his pranks. You know, he'd done this before, jumped off a bridge, and he was an expert swimmer. And, of course, disappeared for just a few weeks and let everyone have a funeral. I think he even attended one of his funerals. That was marvelous. Marvelous joke on everyone. And then just sort of, you know, popped out, here I am! I just keep expecting to hear that. Dwing, 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 dwing. Just around the corner. He may surprise us all.
I always felt that the rumors of Alex's death were greatly exaggerated. I remember when we were working back doing covert operations for the company, and one of Alex's favorite ploys to get into country was to die. He figured that dead bodies were searched a lot less coming into a red zone. I remember at one point, he disguised himself as a telephone in order to bug a house, only to find out they only had radios. He's a strange man, Alex.
Strangest thing, though, was about 5 days after the bridge incident, after the bridge dash, I got on my answering machine, I got this really garbled collect call from Tijuana. And I don't know, but I swear that was his voice. It was real hard, and it was a bad connection. I keep waiting for the machine on all the time, and I keep waiting to call back. That was him, and I'm ready to pull it down. You know?
Okay, action.
Excuse me, have you heard about Alex?
Alex who?
Thank you.
Okay.
We get a slate for this? Got a slate?
I don't know. This is not any time you like.
Yeah.
Can we have glass on the set, please?
Wire on the set, please.